Yeah, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on.
WPFP, translator W276DJ at 103.1 FM Park Falls, Wisconsin. Broadcasting from an old rickety shack on the shores of the Flambeau River. This is Jack FM.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Former President Donald Trump moved closer to securing the Republican presidential nomination. He swept nominating events Saturday in Michigan, Missouri, and Idaho. 2 days before Super Tuesday, ABC's Mary Alice Park says he is on the verge.
Tuesday could very easily be Nikki Haley's last stand. There are not enough delegates at stake this week for Trump to technically clinch the nomination, but he could get very close. And if he dominates across the country like the polls suggest he might, he could make it nearly impossible for her to catch him.
The U.S. dropped 38,000 meals from the air into Gaza's. Humanitarian advocates say more needs to be done to get people aid. Large stretch of Interstate 80 in the Sierra Nevadas of Northern California shut down by the blizzard. It's dumped several feet of snow. Highway Patrol to free up to 300 people who were stuck. And today, commemorations in Selma, Alabama, marking 59 years since Bloody Sunday. This is ABC News. Texas Governor Greg Abbott says that he wants a report into what caused the massive wildfire, the Smokehouse Creek Fire, the largest in Texas history. It's more than 550 miles. He has said it may have destroyed as many as 500 buildings. About 20 million people each year contract norovirus. It's often associated with cruise ships, but there are now a growing number of cases on land.
Health experts are showing a jump in norovirus cases across the country, with the most outbreaks in the Northeast. The virus is highly contagious, and health officials say spreads through contact. ABC News medical correspondent Dr. Darian Sutton says unlike other viruses, hand sanitizer doesn't work to kill norovirus.
This virus has a protein shell that protects it from things like alcohol-based products, and so that's what allows it to stay on surfaces for long periods of time.
Health experts say washing your hands with warm water and soap for at least 20 seconds will help kill germs.
That's ABC's Michelle Franzen. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Diversity efforts are curbed at Wisconsin State Universities, and Republicans promise more scrutiny of diversity, equity, and inclusion across state government in the months to come. But as Farah Siddiqui reports, states that cut back on DEI are literally paying a price.
When events are scheduled in places with policies that are considered non-inclusive or discriminatory, that place is often assumed to support these initiatives. Dr. M. Ray Perryman of the Perryman Group, who conducted the independent analysis, says some potential visitors will choose to go elsewhere rather than support places they think are less open to diversity and equity. He says this avoidance risks millions for the Missouri economy.
Travel and tourism losses in Missouri and Kansas could total hundreds of millions of dollars per year, with an associated loss in revenue to the states and local governments.
Bills now under consideration include SB 1314, which would limit state funding for diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, and SB 980, which would prohibit state agencies from doing business with companies unless they'd agreed not to be part of economic boycotts. The Perryman Research says with these types of policies, the state would risk losing nearly $2.6 billion in annual income and almost 24,000 jobs by the year 2030. Perryman also points out that controversial public policies are discouraging to skilled workers seeking long-term employment and young workers as they consider where to begin their careers. He says it also plays a role for organizations in Missouri concerned about retaining employees.
At a time when the U.S. economy is facing major challenges and uncertainty, the competition for quality corporate locations and expansions, as well as skilled workers, is particularly intense, and anti-DEI measures can be particularly damaging for future prosperity.
The report warns of similar negative financial consequences for the state of Kansas. I'm Farah Siddiqui. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Jerry Bell.
The Bucks win again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks beat the Bulls in Chicago 113-97. Giannis with 46 points and 16 rebounds. The Bucks have now won five in a row. Chicago's Nikola Vukovic got frustrated and smacked Milwaukee's A.J. Green in the face and was ejected from the game. Head coach Doc Rivers.
It was great. You know what? I just liked our defensive energy all game. I thought that's what changed the game. I thought we got into them. Game got a little chippy. But I thought it got chippy over just defensive pressure. Just as long as we keep our composure, that was the only thing I kept telling our guys. So, and then Giannis, you know, it's that thing we talked about, feeding the pig, meaning if you fall on a plate, it works. And we had the little angle action, stay with it. You know, the one time they went away from, that's when I jumped up and said, why would you go away from something that just keep running in and keep running in something else? Then you do that.
That's the Bucks head coach, Doc Rivers. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This weather update is sponsored by Hansen HVAC, Heating and Cooling, your local Armstrong Air dealer of Phillips and Manitouish Waters.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. For your Sunday, a mostly cloudy sky, breezy south winds up around 30 miles per hour, highs in the lower 60s. There will be a slight chance of rain in the mid to late afternoon. That rain chance carries over into your Sunday night. Mostly cloudy, lower 30s. It's 39 at our studios.
You're listening to Radio Health Journal, the trusted news source for medicine, science, and technology. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
I'm Shel Lustig.
And I'm Greg Johnson. This week, recognizing the women who've advanced science throughout history.
When we have these ideas lodged deeply in our heads of what a genius looks like or that it doesn't look like a young woman, then we end up with those great problems.
But first, why do some patients have to fight to get a diagnosis?
There's a certain population that completely dismisses what is coming out of a patient and or a parent's mouth if they don't hold that coveted medical degree.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
For John's 60th birthday, his family planned to drive down Old Route 66. But the trip took a detour when his wife got sick with RSV. It's a highly contagious virus that can lead to breathing problems and hospitalizations.
This year, we don't want to cancel our plans. We're protecting ourselves with Pfizer's RSV vaccine, Abrysvo, respiratory syncytial virus vaccine.
Abrysvo, a vaccine to prevent lower respiratory disease from RSV in people 60 years and older. It's not for everyone and may not protect all who receive it. Don't get Abrysvo if you've had an allergic reaction to its ingredients. A weakened immune system may decrease your response. Most common side effects are tiredness, headache, injection site pain, and muscle pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-844-989-7284 or visit abrysvo.com.
So don't wait. Ask your pharmacist or doctor about Pfizer's RSV vaccine, Abrysvo, because every breath matters.
Medical doctors undergo years of education and training, filling their brains with countless diseases and treatments, but no one person is able to remember every condition, no matter how good of a physician they may be. To help bridge this gap, Kristen Taylor created the Medical Passport. It's a tool for patients with rare diseases that's filled out by their primary physician and quickly educates new doctors about their illness. It also includes the patient's current treatment plan so they can get immediate care.
You can hand a child medical records to an ER doctor, but it's filled out by you. I mean, that doesn't mean as much to them. And if you have boxes and boxes and boxes of official medical records from other hospitals, again, that's coming from pages and pages and pages of things that they don't have time to read. So this is a very, like I said, snapshot of the disease, but it also provides a treatment plan and it's an educational level for these doctors.
The educational component was essential for Taylor because she's seen firsthand the danger of being treated by uninformed medical professionals. Her daughter, Rebecca, was 7 years old when the family thought her appendix burst. Taylor rushed her to the hospital where doctors ran various tests, only to realize that Rebecca's appendix was completely fine. They told Taylor that nothing was wrong, even though the 7-year-old was still screaming in pain after being given shots of morphine.
I remember the ER doctor looking at me and just raising their hands and said, well, what do you want me to do? I've done all the tests. I said, well, I don't want to take my child home like this. So it became almost a fight in the ER with the other doctor. And I said, something is wrong. I need to figure out what's wrong. And she said, well, I've done everything and every test and I'm the doctor. You're not the doctor. And that was really the conversation that we had. And all of a sudden, the computer dinged in the back. And we realized that it was pancreatitis. Her amylase and lipase were raised. And then the doctor turned to me and said, I'm really sorry. This is a serious affliction and we need to hospitalize your child immediately.
That was the start of Rebecca's life moving in and out of hospitals. Pancreatitis is a condition where the pancreas is inflamed and the digestive enzymes that it releases begin to eat away at the pancreas itself. Chronic pancreatitis, which is what Rebecca was diagnosed with, is extremely rare in children. In fact, Taylor says many physicians they've encountered don't even know how to treat it. In addition to chronic pancreatitis, Rebecca has a neurological disease that attacks her organs. Between these two conditions, Rebecca's had more than 160 procedures. And when Taylor searched for support groups to help her daughter on this journey, there were none. Taking matters into her own hands, Taylor created Rebecca's Wish, a nonprofit for children with pancreatitis.
The reason we focused our nonprofit on pancreatitis, though, was because we realized almost every other organ she had that was afflicted had some form of knowledge and some form of help. Like, you have a colectomy, there's support groups for people who have colectomies and have to have all of the nuances from bag care on down. You could look it up and there's tens of thousands of people online discussing the merits of that. With pancreatitis, particularly in children, there was nothing, absolutely nothing.
Not only were there no support groups, but there wasn't much research or widespread knowledge about pediatric pancreatitis. This lack of awareness makes it really difficult for kids to be correctly diagnosed. Lisa Morgan's son, Christian, was 4 when she took him to the hospital. At first, the staff said his stomach pain and nausea was just a stomach bug. But as they were about to leave, the doctor stopped the family and said Christian had acute pancreatitis and needed to be transferred to a different hospital.
So we got transferred there, and then they just put him on a clear liquid diet and just kind of gave him a lot of fluid hydration and said, okay, well, this should just be a random thing. It's just an acute flare-up. We don't know why it happened. He should be fine. You should be good to go.
Christian left the hospital 3 days later, but soon became a regular at the emergency room.
For the next 8 years, Morgan was told her son's extreme stomach pain and vomiting was a product of constipation. And just like Taylor, Morgan had to fight for her son's life.
In October of 2020, we went to the ER, and after getting sick and tired of being told it's just constipation and doing x-rays, I very politely, sternly told the doctor, "You're going to test for this? I tell you every time he had a flare-up when he was four, and you guys tell me every time it's just a random thing. It has nothing to do with now." So I demanded that they test it for the lipase and amylase, which are the levels that get elevated when you're having a pancreatitis flare-up.
A couple of hours later, Christian was transferred to a children's hospital and eventually diagnosed with chronic pancreatitis. After nearly a decade of suffering, Christian's finally able to get a treatment plan that will ease the pain of this incurable condition. But why is it so hard for these families and many others to get to this point?
Why are certain providers and medical doctors not listening to family members who have lived through a disease path for such a long time? Why is it automatically dismissed just because they don't happen to have a medical degree behind them? I've lived in the hospital for over 1,500 days. You would be hard-pressed to find a mother who lived in the hospital, did not leave with her child in affliction that period of time, and gone from every floor to surgical, to ICU, to transplant floor, ERs. I pretty much lived in every portion of the hospital.
Taylor recognizes that not every medical professional deserves this criticism. Rebecca's experienced great care throughout her journey. However, they've encountered enough stubborn doctors to make them feel like this is an issue that needs to be immediately addressed.
There's a certain population that completely dismisses what is coming out of a patient and or a parent's mouth if they don't hold that coveted medical degree. And a lot of mistakes are happening to this day because of that. If we are able to listen in the medical profession, from nurses to doctors to other types of specialists, mental health specialists, if we're able to listen to the journey that the family has been on, then in almost every single case, we can learn something from that family because their journey is very unique. Pain is exhibited in different ways. A lot of diseases are manifested in different ways.
Chronic pancreatitis is extremely painful. Patients like Rebecca and Christian are in constant pain and have had to learn strategies to help manage their agony, which can be misconstrued by physicians.
What could be mine or your level 5 pain isn't going to be the same for Christian. And he's really good at trying to distract himself on the phone. And they see that and they're like, "Oh, he can't possibly be a level 8 pain. Because look at him. He's just scrolling TikTok over here." But for Christian, it's how he's trying to distract himself. He's used to finding other means, or he's really good at making jokes to kind of get everyone to laugh with him. And then they're like, "Well, he's joking. He can't possibly be at 8. And I'm like, "I assure you, he is." So sometimes we still have to tell the doctors, "You may see this, but I'm telling you, it's this."
Rebecca's had similar experiences. When she was going through a pancreas transplant at age 12, a new nurse entered the room. She asked what Rebecca's pain level was on a scale of 1 to 10, to which she responded, 7.
And I remember the nurse looking at Rebecca and saying, "You know, you don't look like you were at a 7. You were drawing and coloring and sitting up, you know, earlier. I'm going to go ahead and put you at a 4. Well, my daughter had learned how to live with pain. She lived with pain her whole life from the age of 7 on. And so she knew how to distract for pain because that's one of the things that the doctors tell you to do. And so here she is. Okay, fine. Nurse puts a 4. Next pain scale monitoring. What is your pain level? Rebecca said, "It's actually a little bit worse. It's at an 8. And the nurse said, "You know, you just don't look like an 8. I've seen 8s before. This isn't an 8. We're going to put you down as a 5.
Taylor says this type of constant back and forth with doctors who didn't understand the condition caused a lot of mistakes. Before Rebecca needed a transplant, she had been checked into a hospital where the physicians immediately told them she didn't have chronic pancreatitis, because children don't get that condition. This led to incorrect tests and treatments. Then when the family moved to a different hospital, the medical team had no idea how to treat Rebecca's condition. This lack of knowledge and treatment caused irreversible damage to her pancreas, which led her to the transplant.
So we spent 7 weeks in a hospital every single day with doctors coming in saying, "We have no idea what to do." And by the end of that, we met an adult doctor because we were in the pediatric world that was willing to take Rebecca, and he became a huge blessing to us, and then performed a stent procedure, which relieved the swelling of the ducts that had closed down. And it was the first time in months Rebecca was even able to take a sip of water, much less eat anything. And this was because series and series and series of doctors not only were not knowledgeable about this disease path, but didn't know what to do and didn't even know how to try. And so she was literally checked out of one of the hospitals to die.
At the time, Taylor wished she had had the ability to educate these doctors and the credibility for them to believe her. Now with the medical passport, patients like Rebecca and Christian are able to get the immediate care they need whenever they experience a flare-up. The document is available for free online and can be used for any complicated diseases, not just pancreatitis. You can find links to the passport and more information about Kristen Taylor, Lisa Morgan, and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
Hey, it's your girl Lonnie Love, and this segment is brought to you by Metamucil. Are you ready to take charge of your digestive health? I know I am. That's why I'm teaming up with Metamucil for the 2-week challenge. Metamucil's 4-in-1 fiber helps promote regularity. Unlike many fibers, Metamucil's psyllium fiber gels to trap and remove waste from your digestive system, helping you feel lighter and more energetic after just 2 weeks. Try the Metamucil 2-week challenge today. Learn more at Metamucil.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Coming up, what does a genius look like when Radio Health Journal returns?
Tax Talk with Straight Talk.
You give and you give. This tax season, you get with Straight Talk Wireless. You get a reliable 5G network and unlimited data and a Samsung Galaxy A14 included when you buy an extended Silver Unlimited plan. Yeah. So you can give your janky phone to your kid.
Yeah! Switch to Straight Talk for plans starting as low as $25 a line per month for 4 lines. Find us at straighttalk.com. For network management practices, visit straighttalk.com. Device offer ends 4/14/24. Online only. Family plan discount with 4 lines all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Taxes and fees apply.
Did you know that feeling sluggish or weighed down could be a sign that your digestive system isn't working at its best? Taking Metamucil every day can help. Metamucil fiber powders help promote your daily digestive health using a plant-based fiber called psyllium. The gelling action of this special fiber traps and removes waste so you can feel lighter and more energetic. Metamucil, promoting digestive health for a better you. Learn more at Metamucil.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
If you were asked to come up with the names of a few geniuses throughout history, who would stand out? Lise Meitner? Charlotte Bronte? Rachel Carson? Wait a minute. Who exactly are these so-called geniuses? If you're like most people, these are not the names that first popped into your head. Your list may have included men like Albert Einstein, Leonardo da Vinci, Charles Darwin, or Stephen Hawking. But why is that? Is it only because men are geniuses? Hardly. And what makes a person a genius anyway? Is the classification easy to quantify?
I think it's very subjective. I think most of the ways that we've used genius or tried to quantify genius in the past, from crazy things like the size of one's head to the things we use now like IQ, have just been found to be over and over again not very valid. All an IQ test does is determine how good you are at taking an IQ test. And so often they're also very gendered, and we need to expand our definition of what genius is and who can be a genius.
That's Janice Kaplan, author of The Genius of Women, From Overlooked to Changing the World.
Let me tell you one historical story about a woman named Lise Meitner who discovered nuclear fission back in the 1930s. And it was a great discovery that won the Nobel Prize, but she didn't win the Nobel Prize. Her male lab partner did, because the men on the Nobel Committee just couldn't imagine that it could be a woman who made this great breakthrough. And when we have these ideas lodged deeply in our heads of what a genius looks like, or that it doesn't look like a young woman, then we end up with those great problems.
Thankfully, much has changed since the 1930s, and today's science community is determined to mend the mistakes of the past.
The good news on the other side of that is that physicists since have recognized what an egregious oversight it was and have started naming things after her. And there's a star named after her and an asteroid. And yes, there is a box on the periodic table named in her honor. And that is very encouraging to realize that perhaps we're starting to recognize some of the people who have been overlooked for way too long.
While Meitner received some past due credit for her discoveries, what's the full breakdown of female scientists who've been recognized for their contributions to the field?
6% of Nobel Prize winners are women overall, and that boils down to just 3 in physics and 5 in chemistry and 12 in physiology or medicine. So very few.
That's Catherine Whitlock, author of 10 Women Who Changed Science and the World. In her book, Whitlock hopes to bring attention to some of the brilliant women in science who may have been overlooked. One of these women is the Italian scientist Rita Levi-Montalcini, who won a Nobel Prize in Physiology in 1986. She practiced her craft from her bedroom in Italy while hiding from the Nazis during World War II.
She had to flee Rome up into the hills around Tuscany, and with the help of her mother and her brother, actually assembled a laboratory in what was effectively her bedroom. Nothing stopped her. She was working on her field of research, which was neurology, and she was looking at how neurons, the nerve fibers in the nervous system, developed. And she was working with chick embryos, and there are some lovely stories about how she would collect eggs from the local farmyard and operate on the embryos at a very early stage to try and discover what was driving the development of the nervous system. And because the food shortages were so great in wartime, she would insist that the family ate the eggs afterwards. So she, and obviously, you know, she was constantly being ostracized for her Jewish background and really had to fight constantly to be recognized.
Despite the chaos of war, science and the men and women behind these discoveries persisted. Perhaps the most famous name on Whitlock's curated list is Marie Curie, who was the first woman to win the Nobel Prize and is one of only 4 people in the prize's history who has won it twice.
We talk about Nobel Prize winners, and that you could argue is one of the highest accolades in science, but none of these women set out to win a Nobel Prize. And I think we were very struck by 3 or 4 shared characteristics that these women had. And I think because they were working at a time when it was A, difficult for women to work at all, and B, in particular, very difficult to work in science, it was hugely male orientated, their characteristics really bring out what it takes to succeed, both in science and any areas of life. And I think the key, we've mentioned partnerships, they were all hugely tenacious. I've often used the word, they had a terrier-like approach. They never gave up digging away, even when, as was frequently the case, the working conditions were absolutely appalling, to the point that Marie Curie died because of her science from radiation sickness.
The challenges women like Rita Levi-Montalcini and Marie Curie faced during the 20th century are unimaginable in today's landscape. Kaplan says it would have been easy to blame men for the extraordinary achievements of women that have been largely ignored. But that doesn't do anything to solve the problem.
It's not just that we live in a patriarchy, but the patriarchy lives in us. It's very hard sometimes to realize how affected we are by the ethos. It becomes the very air we breathe. And so if you're expected to do something and everybody you see around you is behaving in that particular way, it doesn't occur to you that there's something else. Or if it does, it's very, very difficult to achieve. I spoke to so many wonderful women geniuses, women doing extraordinary work for this book, but I'm also aware that each one of them had to figure out her own path. We're still at a point where women are achieving things and they're the first woman to do it. And that was kind of startling to me. You think somehow that we're long beyond that.
Kaplan says today's big names in science exhibit the same kind of tenacity and positive outlook that female geniuses of the past embodied.
They did find over and over again that the women who did succeed had a positive attitude and looked beyond that. And I think if you spend a lot of your time thinking of yourself as a genius and concerned about what's holding you back, it's very hard to focus on your work too. I know it's a little bit unfair because it is saying that every woman has got to work this out for herself and figure this out for herself. But victimization, which I think sometimes the feminist movement has taken on a little bit too much now, in my view, is not been a positive for women.
Being recognized as a genius isn't a male versus female issue, but rather it's the construction of societal norms that hold people back.
I think it's important to understand that many of the traits that we're talking about in men and women are a lot more similar than they are different, and that a lot of the differences are really culturally enforced. And so much of the neuroscience research now is finding that some of the distinctions we think we make between male and female brains is also pretty unfounded. One researcher said that she has never seen an exclusively male or exclusively female brain, that most brains, all brains, are mosaics of traits. And isn't that a nice way to think of it? That a mosaic is kind of interesting, right? And we all have bits and pieces of who we are. And so if we recognize those, recognize people as individuals, I think we allow everybody to move a lot farther and a lot faster.
So the next time you're asked to name a genius, rather than jumping to the stereotypical answer of Einstein or Shakespeare, look further to the names that may have been overlooked. Read up on the contributions of Lise Meitner or Charlotte Bronte or any of the many women named in these books. Janice Kaplan's The Genius of Women and Catherine Whitlock's book, 10 Women Who Changed Science and the World. You can learn more about this topic and all of our guests by visiting our website at radiohealthjournal.org. This segment originally aired on our sister show, Viewpoints Radio, in March of 2020. It was written and produced by Polly Hansen. Our lead producer is Kristen Farah. Our production manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Greg Johnson.
Radio Health Journal returns in just a moment.
I have diabetes. I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
I have asthma. I'm at risk too.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine, a Pfizer vaccine that can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Tax Talk with Straight Talk.
You give and you give. This tax season you get with Straight Talk Wireless. You get a reliable 5G network and unlimited data and a new Samsung Galaxy A15 for just $99. So you can give your janky phone to your kid.
Yeah!
Good talk.
Switch to Straight Talk for plans starting as low as $25 a line per month for 4 lines. Find us at Walmart and StraightTalk.com. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com. Device offer ends 4/14/24. In-store activation on single Silver Unlimited plan or higher required. Family plan discount with 4 lines all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Taxes and fees apply.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Roll Charmin Ultra Strong when you drop in the beat. It cleans way less effort on your seat. Yeah. Roll it. Drop it. Yeah. Roll it. Drop it.
Okay.
Charmin flows extra strong from the road. Get your butt hella clean while you're sitting on the bowl. Yeah. It's all you need for that bathroom groove. Get you in and out without nothing to prove.
Charmin Ultra Strong cleans better so you can use less. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Medical notes this week. Viagra is having a rebrand in the medical community. Many newborns who run out of oxygen during pregnancy or birth develop brain damage. Most studies focus on how to prevent this occurrence, but new research in the Journal of Pediatrics is one of the first to look at how to reverse the damage. The results show that using Viagra as a treatment is not only safe, but may be effective in repairing brain damage. Scientists are continuing this research to find the best treatment option for these babies. All sleep is good sleep, or is it? New research in the Journal of the American Heart Association shows the harmful effects of getting too little and too much sleep. Both ends of this spectrum can cause silent brain injuries, which often foreshadow stroke and dementia. This study further proves that sleep is a crucial component of our physical and mental health. And finally, are you stressed out? There may soon be a pill for that. Chronic stress can cause heart disease, obesity, depression, and more. And though current medications can ease the symptoms of these secondary conditions, there is not much that fights the source of these issues, which is stress. New research published in Nature Communications hopes to control the stress response before it can create these negative secondary effects. And that's Medical Notes this week. I'm Shel Lustig.
For John's 60th birthday, his family planned to drive down Old Route 66. But the trip took a detour when his wife got sick with RSV. It's a highly contagious virus that can lead to breathing problems and hospitalizations.
This year, we don't want to cancel our plans. We're protecting ourselves with Pfizer's RSV vaccine, Abrysvo, respiratory syncytial virus vaccine.
Abrysvo, a vaccine to prevent lower respiratory disease from RSV in people 60 years and older. It's not for everyone and may not protect all who receive it. Don't get Abrysvo if you've had an allergic reaction to its ingredients. A weakened immune system may decrease your response. Most common side effects are tiredness, headache, injection site pain, and muscle pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-844-989-7284 or visit Abrysvo.com.
So don't wait. Ask your pharmacist or doctor about Pfizer's RSV vaccine, Abrysvo, because every breath matters.
Thank you for joining us this week and every week as we break down the science stories you need to know. You can find all of our past segments and guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and X for daily content. And tune in next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.
You need skill and a little luck to play the game of pool, and you could say 1Q Making Company in Wisconsin has both. Schmelke Q's in Rice Lake is the oldest pool cue maker in the U.S. and remains a family-owned, third-generation operated business. Schmelke started as a one-man shop in the 1940s. Now more than 20 employees work at the facility. So do you know which state has the most cue making manufacturers? Is it Maryland, Minnesota, Wisconsin? The answer coming up. Pool is an old game, and the cues similar to the ones used to play today were created in the late 1600s in Northern Europe. Pool came to America in the 19th century. So did you guess which state currently has four of the top five cue manufacturers? It is Wisconsin. And Schmelke Cues in Rice Lake has also been inducted into the International Cue Makers Hall of Fame, making this a worldwide slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This weather update is sponsored by Hansen HVAC, Heating and Cooling, your local Armstrong Air dealer of Phillips and Manitouish Waters.
This week on Viewpoints.
Large parts of the coastal area have become very difficult to live in, to grow things in, and to also get fresh water and so on.
What will happen when poorer countries begin collapsing from the effects of climate change? Then,
soul music is really the context in which white America is introduced to the black church tradition.
In the 1960s, two record labels shaped the sound of soul music. But the story of Stax and Motown also tells the story of civil rights. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Thinking about gas mileage. You know, changing your oil with a full synthetic oil like Castrol Edge can help your engine get more miles. Right now, you can get 5 quarts with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99. Get started on your next job today with the parts you need when you need them at AutoZone or AutoZone.com.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
KFC's new Smash Potato Bowl is out here looking like an absolute snack. For just $3.49, you get crispy secret recipe fries topped with creamy mashed potatoes, cheese sauce, bacon crumbles, and even more melty cheese. If you're looking to smash, your hunger, grab KFC's new Smash Potato Bowl for just $3.49. For a little extra, add nuggets to the mix. It's finger-licking good. Prices and participation may vary. Tax, tip, and fees extra.
At the end of 2023, the UN Climate Change Conference, COP28, took place in Dubai. Every year, almost every country in the world attends the two-week-long meeting, making it the biggest and most important conference on climate change.
This annual conference of parties is where countries send delegations from their various ministries. They can range from, say, environmental ministries or, you know, climate change. They come to this conference to discuss international climate change policy. And this is where the Paris Agreement was drafted. And this is also where all the terms, you know, the ways in which the Paris Agreement is going to be implemented is also being drafted.
That's Navita Khan, an associate professor and chair of anthropology at Johns Hopkins University. Khan is also the author of the book, In Quest of a Shared Planet, Negotiating Climate from the Global South. This year's conference was the largest turnout in its history, with close to 84,000 people in attendance. One agreement reached between nations was a promise to collectively begin phasing out the use of fossil fuels like oil, coal, and natural gas. These sources account for over 75% of global greenhouse emissions, a key contributor to climate change. While there was a mutual agreement reached, scientists criticized the lack of specificity for these promises. Leaders didn't reach a conclusion on how much or when exactly these fuels would be phased out by. However, there was a numerical target for reducing the use of methane, which is the primary component of natural gas. The new policy, the Global Methane Pledge, was signed by 150 countries and promises that methane use will be cut by 30% by 2030. Another big focus at this year's conference was to get a better picture of how much countries have accomplished so far when it comes to past climate promises. Sadly, this analysis showed that several nations are lagging far behind on reducing emissions, shifting to renewable energy sources, and building reparation funds for smaller, poorer countries and island nations disproportionately affected by the mass pollution caused by larger developed nations over the last 100-plus years.
That question keeps coming up, you know, to what extent are current industrialized countries, such as those largely in the West, they not only to blame or the cause for it, but what role are they going to play in terms of taking the lead in making their economies net zero or carbon neutral and so on?
Khan says smaller, developing, or least developed countries are pushing for greater aid on the global stage. But unfortunately, this hasn't panned out yet because of intruding issues like war and rising tensions between large countries that's stalling climate progress.
As, you know, developing countries such as Brazil, China, India have grown in size and their economies have grown in size, the industrialized countries have felt that historical responsibility isn't as important as what's happening right now, and that we should take the current situation into consideration, and that developing countries should be equally responsible for mitigating as much as industrialized developed countries.
And this still remains a lingering question of responsibility at these climate talks. As an anthropologist, Khan spent several years doing field work in Bangladesh, a country just to the east of India that's dealing with the fallout of climate change on multiple fronts. She says that Bangladesh is considered a least developed country on the world stage and has teamed up with other smaller factions to gain a louder voice.
They have both been trying to put pressure on the developed countries to show leadership and to help out in terms of bringing these other countries into a state of resilience, their economies, make them more resilient. But they've also been increasingly pushing on the developing countries to take more responsibility and to step up and so on.
Bangladesh opens up to the Bay of Bengal and has many islands, both big and small, off its southern border.
I was living and working on a small island there that is made up of silt, and the island comes and goes. And so I was very interested to understand how people live in a very dynamical environment. But at the same time, you know, over the period of time I was researching there, which was almost 10 years, I started to observe what I guess would consider climate change related changes, such as, you know, an intensification of rains, the monsoons coming later, longer periods of cold, and so on. And so I started to wonder how it is that the international community was thinking about a place like this, encountering and combating climate change.
Khan's fieldwork on the islands of Bangladesh pushed her to learn more about how the country's leaders and scientists are actively dealing with climate change, both domestically and abroad. Bangladesh today is still considered a relatively new nation, but one that's fast developing. However, the country is already feeling the impacts of higher sea levels, longer droughts, worsening heat waves, and fiercer storms.
I was quite challenged by the fact that, you know, it was a poor country without necessarily all the infrastructure to deal with the challenges of being not just a poor country, but a poor country which regularly flooded. And so one of the things that people will readily know about Bangladesh is just about its very large floods, in which, you know, 25% to 50% of the country's territory can sometimes be underwater and for extended periods of time. But with climate change, the problems intensify. Not only do we have floods that come more frequently, not in the cyclical way they used to, which is, you know, you had the 10-year flood, the 20-year flood, the 50-year flood. Now it's almost every other year there were floods.
On top of flooding, Bangladesh is getting hit with more powerful and more frequent hurricanes. Its islands and coastal areas are facing an uncertain future as seawater rises and the land is drenched in salty water, creating an inhospitable environment. Khan saw these climate changes firsthand, but remains optimistic about the country's future because of how its leaders are approaching these challenges. One example is thinking ahead when it comes to disaster response and funding.
Bangladesh has been really in the forefront in trying to think of loss and damage in more creative ways. They started a solidarity fund to already have a pot of money ready in case of climate-related loss and damage. They also started to try and prep smaller towns farther away from the coastal regions to be recipients of refugees from the coastal areas, so internally displaced refugees. And so in anticipation of that shift, they've been already planning for it. And so all of those, you know, in some way sort of position Bangladesh to be a country to look at, to be not just feeling bad for, but also to learn from.
Khan emphasizes that world leaders and private companies must separate geopolitics from climate change policy in order to start building more momentum and switch these climate promises into larger results. Last year was the hottest year on record, and scientists are already expecting upcoming years to break warming records. To find out more about this topic and our guest, Navita Khan, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written by our executive producer, Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Hey, it's your girl, Lonnie Love, and this segment is brought to you by Metamucil. Are you ready to take charge of your digestive health? I know I am. That's why I'm teaming up with Metamucil for the two-week challenge. Metamucil's 4-in-1 fiber helps promote regularity. Unlike many fibers, Metamucil's psyllium fiber gels to trap and remove waste from your digestive system, helping you feel lighter and more energetic after just 2 weeks. Try the Metamucil 2-Week Challenge today. Learn more at Metamucil.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Coming up, Marvin Gaye, Aretha Franklin, Otis Redding. This week, we dive into the rise and fall of soul in America when Viewpoints returns.
KFC's new smash potato bowl is out here looking like an absolute snack. For just $3.49, you get crispy secret recipe fries topped with creamy mashed potatoes, cheese sauce, bacon crumbles, and even more melty cheese. If you're looking to smash, your hunger, grab KFC's new Smash Potato Bowl for just $3.49. For a little extra, add nuggets to the mix. It's finger-licking good. Prices and participation may vary. Tax, tip, and fees extra.
Each week on the Viewpoints Radio podcast, you'll hear from our leading experts on an important topic within education, history, society, psychology, and more.
If you can show a good money personality, one where you've got good values around how you acquire, how you use, and how you manage money, those patterns will be passed along generations.
Viewpoints Radio podcast is produced by our team of award-winning journalists. Subscribe today by searching Viewpoints Radio wherever you listen to podcasts.
Tax Talk with Straight Talk.
You give and you give. This tax season you get with Straight Talk Wireless. You get a reliable 5G network and unlimited data and a new Samsung Galaxy A15 for just $99. So you can give your janky phone to your kid.
Yeah!
Good talk.
Switch to Straight Talk for plans starting as low as $25 a line per month for 4 lines. Find us at Walmart and StraightTalk.com. For network management practices, visit StraightTalk.com. Device offer ends 4/14/24. In-store activation on single Silver Unlimited plan or higher required. Family plan discount with 4 lines all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Taxes and fees apply.
My ride smells just right, just right, just right, just right.
Y'all gotta try that for Breeze Car.
Just right, just right, just right, just right. La 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 la. Picked up for 40 days of consistent sin. All over Breeze Car clips right on your vent. You know my car's my happy place. Keep that smile on my face. When it smells just right, just right.
Take a look back at some of the biggest hits of the 1960s and songs like My Girl, Ain't No Mountain High Enough, and Sittin' on the Dock of the Bay might come to mind. These timeless classics not only represent a golden age of soul and R&B music, but they also tell the story of Motown and Stax, two record labels that were paving the way for black music during the civil rights movement. Author Mark Anthony Neal says these two companies played a pivotal role in shaping the way black art was accepted by white Americans.
You know, soul music is really the context in which white America is introduced to the black church tradition, at least as it's represented in gospel music at that period of time.
Neal is the James B. Duke Distinguished Professor of African American Studies at Duke University, and has authored several books on African-American popular culture and music. Much of his work focuses on how soul music was a key part of the civil rights movement. He adds that many soul artists gained inspiration from black gospel music.
In the way that the civil rights movement was promoted to white America as a movement around morality, high values, integration, right, all these kinds of things, the black church was the perfect conduit for that message, right? It's the same message that Martin Luther King is drawing from in his own message towards, you know, liberation and integration in that particular moment.
As African Americans moved to cities like Detroit, Chicago, New York, and Philadelphia during the Great Migration, these places became hotspots for soul music as the genre began to grow. Motown was started in 1959 by Berry Gordy, a former automobile worker who saw the value of local musicians around Detroit.
He described his record label as the sound of young America, right? He was making black music that would cross over to white audiences, and given his own experiences in the automobile industry, he understood intimately how to create music that folks would want to listen to in their cars, and Motown was essentially that in the 1960s.
In just a few years, Gordy assembled an all-star roster of talent, including Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, Diana Ross, and the Supremes. The label's radio-centric songs with upbeat, catchy melodies soared to the top of the charts for both black and white audiences. This was unprecedented in a music industry that was, at the time, dominated by white artists.
You know, Berry Gordy understood how to both write and produce, along with all those wonderful producers, Holland Dozier Holland, you know, Smokey Robinson, Norman Whitfield later in the 1960s, who knew how to make pop songs. And there was something to be said about white America allowing these young black folks into their living rooms into their cars on the Ed Sullivan Show. The Supremes, you know, appear on Ed Sullivan nine times between 1963 and 1972. In 73, you know, when Ed Sullivan shutters the show, it was an attempt to really speak to the humanity of black folks.
Motown reached new heights in the 1960s thanks to artists like Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, and even a young Michael Jackson with the Jackson 5. But while Gordy's polished Motown sound dominated the airways, another label in Memphis, Stax Records, was creating a distinctively Southern brand of soul.
Stax is a little different. Obviously, being founded in the South, it was founded by a white brother and sister who were interested in kind of blues music. They began to launch their label also late 50s, early 1960s. One of the most important signees for them was the house band, Booker T and the MGs. Booker T Jones himself was only 17 years old when they first got started, but they really were the foundations and the roots of what we think of as Southern soul. You know, Booker T and the MGs is a fascinating example because they're a multiracial band. And so the idea that you had a label that was founded by two white folks, Al Bell would eventually buy them out, that the most, you know, the sound makers, right, the producers, right, are largely multiracial. You know, it became a kind of metaphor for the ways in which black and white folks could work during the Civil Rights Movement, right?
Along with Booker T and the MGs, the Stax roster included soul icons like Carla Thomas, Sam and Dave, and Otis Redding. These artists drew from Southern blues, gospel, and funk, and drew audiences with their raw and emotional performances. Just like Motown in Detroit, the music of Stax became the sound of Memphis, especially through hard times.
Everyone knows that, unfortunately, there was a traumatic event that happened here in the late 60s, involving a great man, you know, by the name of Martin Luther King Jr.
That's Isaac Daniel, the executive director of Stax Music Academy, a nonprofit after-school and summer music institute in Memphis that carries on the legacy of the label. He says that in the wake of Dr. King's assassination in 1968, the music of Stax brought the community together. As soul progressed into the 1970s, it became more socially conscious and began to push more boundaries. Motown began to experiment with new, more progressive genres. Stax faced a number of financial challenges, ultimately closing its doors in 1975. But the label has since been revived by the Soulsville Foundation, a Memphis nonprofit that also oversees the Stax Music Academy.
The Soulsville Foundation has been integral in developing our community, being community partners for the Soulsville community, providing opportunities for young people of color, also about uplifting and building and using music for, you know, mental awareness and health awareness, things of that nature, and just giving opportunities for kids to grow.
Daniel says Stax Music Academy teaches students every aspect of the music industry, from songwriting to performance, and even business topics like production and marketing. This year, in honor of Black History Month, Stax Music Academy is continuing the legacy of soul music by presenting a live theater show, Stax Meets Motown.
Stax Meets Motown is basically, it is a Black History Month show that we put together with the intent of educating the youth on music, the wonderful music that was created by Motown and the wonderful music that was created by Stax Records.
The lasting legacies of Stax and Motown can be heard through the music we listen to today. Popular genres now, like hip-hop and R&B, have largely borrowed and adapted from soul music of the past. The songs of Motown and Stax can now be heard as samples in rap songs, created by artists like Jay-Z and Kendrick Lamar. If you're interested in hearing some of the iconic soul hits of the 1960s and 70s, Daniel says through September, listeners can stream Stax Meets Motown by visiting staxmusicacademy.org. To find out more about Motown, Stax, the Soulsville Foundation, the Stax Music Academy, and our guests, Mark Anthony Neal and Isaac Daniel, head to viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written by our associate producer, Tabor Brewster. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
KFC's new Smash Potato Bowl is out here looking like an absolute snack. For just $3.49, you get crispy secret recipe fries topped with creamy mashed potatoes, cheese sauce, bacon crumbles, and even more melty cheese. If you're looking to smash your hunger, grab KFC's new Smash Potato Bowl for just $3.49. For a little extra, add nuggets to the mix. It's finger-licking good. Prices and participation may vary. Tax, tip, and fees extra.
Each week on the Viewpoints Radio podcast, you'll hear from our leading experts on an important topic within education, history, society, psychology, and more.
If you can show a good money personality, one where you've got good values around how you acquire, how you use, and how you manage money, those patterns will be passed along generations.
Viewpoints Radio podcast is produced by our team of award-winning journalists. Subscribe today by searching Viewpoints Radio wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. Late last month, a 7-year-old girl died at a South Florida beach after being trapped under several feet of sand. It was a normal